1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you to join the conversation. Or text your question, 411-923, to Rosie on the House. That's how you join the conversation. We're in the Outdoor Living Hour talking all things that plant, grow, or pot it. We actually had a question here on text from an individual wanting to know how to properly care for a potted hibiscus.
Well, hibiscus do very well in pots. One advantage to growing hibiscus in pots is they are cold sensitive, so you can move them if it gets really cold. You can move them under the patio or even in the garage for a few days. But hibiscus are tropical, so they like warm but not super hot, as consistent a temperature as they can get. They're also heavy feeders. And especially anything in a pot is going to require a little more fertilization, perhaps even a lot more fertilization, than something that's growing in ground. Because you are constantly leaching out, the root ball when you're watering, you're flushing things out all the time. So you have to replace, and you have a limited amount of soil space to hold nutrients. So keep them well fertilized, keep them in a brightly lit, probably morning sun, afternoon shade would be ideal. And you should do very well. And hibiscus like good drainage, which is also things that like good drainage tend to do well in pots because you automatically have good drainage unless you're using some really bad potting soil or something. So make sure your soil, anything in pots, make sure your soil drains well. The water should run through the pot relatively easy, and it shouldn't stay wet for a long time.
And you and Mary Lee in last segment had just mentioned, a pot, you can move things around. Maybe I've got a different idea in my mind of a pot. I mean, some of these things are knee high. I mean, I've got a whiskey barrel cut in half that I use as planting garden. I went to pick that up one time. You're not picking that up when you've got your soil and your plants.
And that's a good point. If it's something that think you may want to move, be careful how big a pot you put it in. And that brings up another good point with containers. You didn't have time really to discuss, and I'm sure that she'll cover that in her seminar in Tucson. But, make sure you grow things in a large enough container. When we get into little small pots, those rascals have a hard time in the hot weather. They dry out really quick. Hard to keep them watered. So the plants need to be in an adequate size container anyway. But, kind of the bigger is better when it comes to getting things to last through the summer here in containers.
How long will something last in a container if it's properly cared for? Can you expect it to last as long as it would in ground?
Well, it depends on the plant. Okay, so if it's something that gets really big, probably not. But moderately sized things like a dwarf citrus or a dwarf peach tree could conceivably live as long in that container as it would in the ground, yes. So, depending on the size of the thing and if you're trying to grow a full-sized pine tree or ficus or something in a container, it's just tough to get. I guess it depends on how big you want to get your container. I mean, they grow trees in 72-inch boxes. You could grow one forever in one of those or something like that. But that's pretty impractical unless you have a commercial development or something like that. So it depends a little bit on the plant and the size of the plant. But conceivably, yeah, you could.
Now, in a lot of my reading and publications we get, they talk a lot about companion gardening, where mm-hmm. you match certain vegetables together that for helping pollinate, for mm-hmm. helping, one stalk can be used to support another one.
Right.
That seems to be kind of a breakaway from the traditional row gardening that mm-hmm. everyone's pretty much familiar with. So my question, we've got a pretty young orchard that we've put in. Everything is coming either a 5 or a 15-gallon size. So eventually it'll all grow together. But in the meantime, I've got the water out there. Mm-hmm. I've got 25 feet between these trees. Could I just put a big watermelon and pumpkin patch out there?
Yes. When we were field growing trees way back when I was very young at our Mesa location, we grew a lot of melons and cantaloupes and watermelons. And uh, in the in the tree rows. You know, the trees were planted in the ground, spaced out, put them right in and around the trees, let them cover the ground. It kind of acts like a mulch in a way, shades the ground, covers the ground, keeps it from drying out so fast. And, you know, the plants can spread out and you're watering it anyway. We were flood irrigating the fields at those times. So, I mean, you're running all that water down those furrows and those bermed areas in the field anyway. So sure, why not? Absolutely. Especially low growing things that would grow on the ground. So anything like squashes, cucumbers, melons would be fine. Absolutely.
And is there ever a point where the trees would shade it too much? Or
perhaps.
Will they grow in? Okay.
Perhaps. You might have to change some things, change the different types of crops, perhaps, or eventually it may just get too big a canopy and too shady. Again, though, as the trees grow, and maybe you can limb them up a little bit to where it's shady, but it's not dark. You know, they still might do okay in some of those areas.
Well, I have a secret fear. I love our melon patches. We eat a lot of watermelon. I love cantaloupe. Kids love carving pumpkin. In the summertime, when the watermelon's ripe, I've always got a fear of walking through there and coming upon a snake. But I've never found a snake in a watermelon patch. I mean, it seems like the perfect spot for them, under the shade, mm-hmm. hidden, mm-hmm. water, insects to eat. But I have never come across one. I don't know if...
I don't know. I don't know.
I always go with a rake in front of me, mm-hmm. just in case, but I've never found one.
Huh. I don't know why they wouldn't be there if there were snakes present in the area anyway, but... I that's a good question. I don't know.
I'll have to do a little more observing on that. We had Dwayne write in from Tucson and wants to know about their roses. They moved here from Missouri, fairly new Arizona residents, and the property they're on has roses, and he just kind of needs us to help fill in the blanks from there. What do I do with them? What's the proper care?
Well, roses are, you know, roses are roses. They like to be fed regularly. They like to be pruned back heavily this time of year. I mean, we didn't talk about that early in the show, but it is a good time to be pruning back before they start. You got a few more weeks. You can prune them back and make sure they get good fertilizer. And once they start leafing out and growing, you know, they do need a regular source of nutrients, especially to bloom good. And use something that's designed for roses or blooming type plants. So.
Do you have a recommendation?
On a fertilizer? You know, Organo is one that's been around forever, does a good job. Fertilome does a good job. Dr. Earth has a pretty good one if you want to go completely organic. Some people mix their own bone and blood meal together. That does a fair job as well.
And as we get into February, it's one of those key indicators for our citrus and fertilizing around Valentine's Day.
Yeah, we're coming up on citrus feeding.
You don't have to wait specifically for Valentine's Day. That's just your
mental reminder. We generally just want to do it before the spring push of new growth comes out. So sometime probably starting actually about now, maybe through the middle of March, you know, once they start kind of blooming, you probably don't want to feed them much until they have set their fruit again. But, you know, so in the next 6-8 weeks, this is a great time to be fertilizing actually just about anything. You know, as stuff's coming out of cold weather, it's going to want to push new growth. So whether they're potted or planted in the ground, you want to get the nutrients there available so that they can really, you know, push out and rejuvenate themselves. And again, I like locally manufactured fertilizers because I think they do a better job of taking into account our alkalinity, you know, our growing conditions, our need for certain nutrients. So things like, even though Fertilome's not technically local, they're West Texas. Organo is
not
local.
A hugely different climate.
Right. If you want to go liquid, Biofeed is a great one for potted plants or lawns or whatever. That's really, I think, the smart, but all fertilizers work. Some people ask, well, anything that has an analysis and is a fertilizer it's going to work. You just got to use them. Don't leave them on the shelf in the garage.
What is the shelf life of some fertilizers? And I've never had a bag long enough to really worry about it.
Right.
But what is, can they make it through a couple summers without
losing
their...
Oh, a couple, yeah. Generally what does them in is moisture. And even just moisture in the air. A lot of those fertilizers, you know, are kind of hydroscopic. They'll suck moisture right out of the air, and you'll see the bags, and, you know, they'll start weeping through the bags. And once that starts happening, they get wet, they start clumping up. It kind of renders them pretty useless or hard to use. So I guess the moral of that story is you shouldn't have them that long.
Use it.
Use it up.
1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you.